This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on community radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
And that's right, we are back here on a Friday Rave here at Community Radio 3CR, and I'm back in the studio this week with Jacob.
Yay!
Big ups to everyone who supported the show through Radiothon, because we made our target. So a big thank you to everyone who donated and to everyone who's donated to the station throughout Radiothon. It's going all for the month of June, and I think we're just over halfway there. So, you know, tell your mates, tell all your rich friends and...
So while we've made our target, that's not all there is to it.
Yeah.
We're going to help the station as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that will lead nicely into the 50th birthday celebrations at Collingwood Town Hall on Saturday, 4th of July.
4th of July.
Yeah.
Independent Radio Day.
So we hope to see you all there. But again, we've got a lot to talk about this week. We're going to get to data centres a little bit later in the show, but I just wanted to point out that I'm sure many listeners would have seen Gina Reinhart's hand over fist literal blabbering for Pauline Hanson at this... it was in Townsville, wasn't it? The Bush meeting.
Yeah.
And handing over the bulldozer. And now, you know, it was kind of, they've killed satire, the assholes.
What can you do? What can you do? I mean, we were talking earlier, the connection between Elon Musk's chainsaw.
Yes, exactly.
And Gina Reinhart's bulldozer.
Yeah, and I think that the connection, you know, you can see that dumb little stunt with the bulldozer, like Elon Musk's chainsaw. I do want to point out that I don't necessarily see it as just like the dumb little ego stroke or the pick me, Elon, here, thing. I think it's a really strategic move by Gina Reinhart to flatter the richest person in the world, knowing exactly that he works on flattery.
Absolutely.
And I think that is a strategic move because Gina is primed to create the mine-to-magnet rare earth supply chain for Elon's companies, SpaceX and Tesla.
Yes.
And so they use an exorbitant amount of rare earths, but in particular, neodymium and praseodymium, otherwise known as NDPR, and I'll use that acronym, the four-letter acronym. Because I just want to go into that the key companies where we've talked about critical minerals and rare earths a lot on the show, and that this is creating a supply chain directly to SpaceX and Tesla, and that's what this strategic move is. So a little bit on Gina Reinhart. So Gina has a stake in Hancock Prospecting is her company. She's the richest person in Australia. She's got a stake in MP Materials, Linus Rare Earth, Rare Earths USA and Arafura Resources. And then so this is all bolstered by... about a week ago, SpaceX IPO went public, and though the full amount isn't disclosed, Gina Reinhart put an estimated $1.5 billion for shares in SpaceX.
Right, so it's not so much she's supplying just Elon Musk's company, although he will still be the majority shareholder, one would imagine, but it's her company.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the stock market kind of confuses me quite a lot, but the SpaceX IPO kind of the shares went, they oversold shares, I think is what.
They oversold shares in the IPO.
Something like that, yeah. But wow. Don't.
The IPO is the initial public offering, folks, just by the way.
Yeah, so don't quote me on that because that might be fake news. But I don't know, there's something anyway. But anyway, back to...
fake news, everyone else is doing it, mate. We may as well.
So, I mean, on that, I also just want to say that, you know, Gina said a lot of things in that meeting about giving islands to Elon Musk, to letting Israel put their war drones. And I think this is, again, that same, their war drones here, this is that same strategy of flood it with shit that Steve Bannon has done. And that was weird.
Yeah.
I don't know where that telephone came from. Anyway, and that this is this strategy of just flood it with a lot of things that you say, and then nothing that you say will ever be considered wild. But back to rare earth, so, and yeah, specifically NdPr. Gina doubled her stake in May of this year. Gina Rinehart doubled her stake in Arafura Rare Earths. So she now holds a 17.5% stake in that company, and it as its single largest shareholder. So Arafura is Nolan's Bohr mine and processing facility, projected processing facility near Alice Springs last week also got fast-tracked for approval by the Northern Territory government.
Ah.
And so this is one of the projects, if you've listened to the show in the past, that the Albanese government kind of pinpointed, I guess, when he was doing the critical minerals deal with Trump.
Yeah.
And so that's got fast-tracked approval.
And that's the one just south of Santa Teresa, isn't it?
Yeah, or is it on the other side? I thought it was northwest.
Northwest, is it? Okay. There must be another one.
Northwest of Mwanta, Alice Springs. So her stake in MP Materials. So MP Materials is another company we've spoken about on the show. We spoke about them specifically on the show in that they have a partnership with it starts with M and the name of it is evaded me at the moment, with the Saudi state-owned mining company conglomerate.
Yeah.
But MP Materials runs the California Mountain Pass rare earth mine.
Yep.
And is the only US company to...
Maiden. The South Maiden. African company, yeah.
Thank you. The Saudi company, rather. Yeah, thank you. And so MP Materials is the only US company to mine and process rare earths domestically. And so her stake in that is at... Also, that happened in this year or in the last few months at 8.4%, and that's valued at just over $1 billion. Mm. And she's a majority investor in that company. In Linus Rare Earths, that runs Mount Weld,
yep,
in Western Australia, and
just
they
out of Laverton.
Yeah, and they send their heavy rare earths to Malaysia to get processed, but they have just opened in Kalgoorlie the light rare earth processing facility.
Mm-hmm.
She has just, I think it's 5.7% of shares and voting rights. Again, worth just another billion.
Right, jeez.
And in May of this year, in Linus, it was 2024 that she invested in Linus.
Mm-hmm.
And in May of this year, she acquired a 6% stake in USA Rare Earths, which is, apart from MP Materials, going to be developing rare earth processing capabilities, mine and processing capabilities, and be the second only company to do so in the US. And so that's where am I? Yeah, so a 6% stake in Rare Earths USA.
So she's all over it.
She's all over it. So collectively, these companies are the only ones outside of China with a processing rare earth processing capability. So that being MP Materials and Linus, and the other two are on their way to getting it.
Yeah.
As well as that, Gina has invested about $130 million, which seems like when you're talking billions, we were just saying when we're talking in Lockheed dollars and AUKUS dollars.
It's funny. We're just sitting outside talking about a couple of other news items, and Mercedes mentioned $130 million, and I just sort of shrugged my shoulders and went, meh.
Yeah.
Because we're used to talking in
military
industrial complex dollars, yeah.
Yeah. So it's all unfathomable amounts of money.
Mm.
They're just numbers on the screen, really, is what exactly they are. But $130 million into US defense stocks, including Northrop Grumman, Lockheed, RTX, and L3Harris. So it's pretty obvious that Gina is single-handedly setting up the supply chains from the mines that she owns, her monopoly on processing capability, and now to the companies that are going to be, quote-unquote, needing the minerals, and setting up her own mine to magnet pipeline. So it is little wonder why she is backing Pauline Hanson so hard.
Of course.
And we know that, and you kind of say, oh, okay, Gina's a, but this is the connections between people like Gina Reinhart. It's like the political economy of fascism, what we saw with Elon Musk and Trump in the US and the gutting of all US government spending under Doge.
That's like we've seen with Netanyahu and Smotrich.
Mm. And so this, it's like a cookie cutter.
Yeah.
Of Gina Reinhart, and I'm sure, obviously, she's not the only one backing Pauline. I'm sure that Pauline is getting a lot of backing from the gas lobby and the normal lobbies, because let's talk about data centres.
Well, let's talk about data centres. I mean, we're always going to, but it's so intertwined. And when you look at, like, you know, Gina Reinhart be right in there, and as will Pauline Hanson,
mm-hmm.
as are every politician.
Yes.
Except maybe the Greens, all right?
Mm. Ed Husic apparently has said that we need to curb data centre growth.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, I think I just saw that. I think maybe that was today.
Right, okay. How long before he gets thrown out of the party?
Yeah, or we need to look at it.
We need to look at it, that's right, because that the implication of that is that they've okayed it and fast-tracked it without even looking at it, which wouldn't surprise me.
Oh.
But data centres, we're talking about, it's blowing my mind because there's a lot of stuff going on in the media about data centres. And activists I'm talking to around the traps are talking about data centres. And they're talking about the money to start with,
mm-hmm.
and that it's going to cost and blah, blah, blah. They're talking about the power it's going to use. I mean, data centres already use 2% of the whole power grid in the United States.
Mm.
If the data centres that are on the cards now get built in Australia, it'll be about 7% of our total energy use. All right? And God knows, I can't even work out how much water it is. And that's 7%, 6.7 or something, almost 7, that's coming from the data centre industry.
Mm.
And they will be playing down the figure as much as possible because they don't you know, there are a whole, when they work out those things, it's like Volkswagen saying they get so many kilometres to the litre.
Mm.
All right, they play it down under ideal conditions, but nothing's ever under ideal conditions, especially, dare I say, since the privatisation of the electricity supply. So it's going to be a lot more than that. But
And that also means that, like, in peaks like summer, some of them are water-cooled, some of them are air-cooled, but when they turn on the evaporative coolers, it means that that's going to be drawing so much more power as well as water in peak summer periods. And so, like, it's going to, like, that draws all of that power
out of the grid.
Out of the grid at that times, but they have to run consistently. They're saying they're not going to use the power in peak times, but on a 40-degree day, they're going to say, oh, we're going to turn off the air coolers so the data centre can blow up. Like, really?
Yeah, they're going to put the data centres at risk so that you can have air conditioning in your house. No, they're going to have precedence. We know they're going to have precedence because they're going to be classified as critical infrastructure.
That's exactly right.
All right? They're literally critical infrastructure, which regardless of what your home is, it may be your castle, but it's not critical infrastructure, and they are going to have priority for house, for the power. They're going to have priority for
water. They've got priority for housing land.
As it is now, but each of these data centers, let's just think of what they are. It's easier to say data centers. They are storage banks. They are what we're talking about, the rare earths, the silicon chips,
the platinum, gold, copper.
But just running the world economy. Mm. And when I say that, let me tell you a little thing like this. Oh, where do we start? There is one company that makes the latest silicon chips, all right? And that is the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only people who can make the latest silicon chips. And they can only make them because they're getting the machinery to put in the factories they produce it from only one company. And that company is, what is it,
ASML.
ASML. Yeah, yeah. I keep getting it confused with ASMR or whatever that is, ASML. They're the only company who can make these machines, all right? And then you've got NVIDIA, who hold all the patents and copyrights to these machines.
Which has, is it NVIDIA that is, like, has the largest capital in the world? Is it the biggest company in the world?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, but not just largest company in the world, but when you add NVIDIA, TSMC and ASML together, of those three companies that are absolutely needed and hold a monopoly on chip production, if those three companies combined were a country, that would be the country with the third largest economy in the world. All right? They're bigger than Japan.
Wow. It's absurd. And when you say 7% of the power grid, kind of, I guess, just putting it into numbers, is like a 150 megawatt data center, which I think the one that is being done in the West.
Yep.
Is 175 megawatts.
Yeah.
150 megawatt data center draws the same amount of power, uses the same amount of power in a year that it would to power Hobart.
Hobart, yeah.
The city the size of Hobart.
Yeah, I was thinking Geelong, but they're probably about the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. And all these...
And that's one.
That's one.
That's one. And there's what, 90?
Yeah. 96, I think, planned for Australia.
Plan, yeah.
Now, let's talk about AUKUS.
Mm-hmm.
Because AUKUS Pillar 2 is about data technology, is about computer technology, all right? And they've brought in, you heard us talking, raving, a couple of years ago, and we've talked about it ever since, the Defence Export Controls Act, and how that extended not just to weapons, but to any what they considered critical for defence industry. Now, data centres are critical because they're all going to be critical infrastructure, critical industry. So they're all coming in to the, what's it called, the AUKUS Pillar 2.
Yes.
Now, that means, even without AUKUS Pillar 2, even because they're information technologies, all these new laws they've put in about what country you had to be born in or have nationality to work on specific parts of it, the giving information, talking to other people from other countries about automatic 6 months, all this kind of bullshit, totalitarian bullshit, comes into play. They're not talking about that.
Mm.
But that's what is going to happen. Those laws are not something that Jacob is saying they might try to do that. These laws are in place. And so then you've got the whole AUKUS thing of the technology transfers. And remember, all military, every military in the world, every war in the world is about transferring resources, about getting more and more of the world's wealth into fewer and fewer hands. I said years ago that there are only three militaries in the world, the dollar, the yuan, and the euro.
Mm.
Now there are only two. The euro's fucked. But, you know... That's the way it is. So we're looking at extending now the military. Why are we extending the military? Because a big bad China might attack Taiwan. Why might, and we need to protect Taiwan. Why do we need to protect Taiwan? Because they're the only places we can get our chips from. So how are we going to protect Taiwan? We're going to build up our military infrastructure, and we're going to become one with the United States.
And in fact, the chip industry was a big way that the US was sort of getting other people within to the US sphere.
Yes.
Was through chip production in places like Taiwan and Singapore. So it utilizes these places for its economic and military.
Yeah, and then some years ago, it forced nations like Qatar to host US-based data centres, and we've spoken about how they want to, one of the plans for Gaza is a giant data center campus, mm-hmm. basically, you know. And all the countries around the Middle East hosting US data centers. And these data centers have been seen as legitimate targets by Iran.
Because they're critical infrastructure.
Because they're critical infrastructure that the military are using. And you think they're going to have a data center up here at the old Ford factory, mm-hmm. or out in the West or wherever, and the military aren't going to use it?
Mm. I think the one in the West has an ASIO level 3 protection status, so that it's going to have parts of the room yeah. that are going to be blocked off.
And that's because it's the most it's the one that's probably amongst the most advanced in Melbourne now. But the way these data centres work, it's not like just this data centre is only processing for this company or that military. That's the whole concept of the internet. Is it's, what's the word, decentralised.
Decentralised, or co-locating is kind of the term that they use. And I want to just get back to, there's a couple of points that I maybe want to have a rave on of what you just said. And one of those is, again, the AUKUS legislation, and we've talked about Australia being considered a domestic source under AUKUS to the US. Mm-hmm. And so we've talked about it, I guess, in terms of military equipment and minerals.
Critical minerals.
But when we're talking about who are the largest data center and server availabilities, is a lot of these data centers then shift the space within the data center, sell it off to companies like Amazon Web Services,
yep.
Microsoft, Google, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Palantir, all of those, you know, they sell their data. And so
all the nastiest, meanest men in the world.
And so as a domestic source, when, say, Zera DC or Next DC sell their data storage and services to a company like that, then that is considered a domestic source to a US company.
Exactly.
And so this is where it comes into play with data centers. Another thing that I just want to talk on, and we did discuss this the other day, but the bottleneck of the silicon chip development. And there is a book called Chip War that kind of goes, and I mm-hmm. recommend, if you know, while we're talking about this, it's a can be pretty dry, but it's a good overview.
Yep.
And when we had Aunty Sue Hazeldine talking about the rocket launches on her country, we talked about at that time the being funded by Peter Thiel, and that the tests that they were doing in low Earth orbit on these rocket tests,
yep.
With Varda, is developing silicon in low Earth orbit for semiconductors and chips.
To make them as thin as possible.
Thin as possible. And we spoke about that. And so when you see this, you know, data centers is sort of, I guess, a cornerstone, I guess, if you like, or a...
Yeah.
Exemplary of the military-industrial complex, of how it impacts.
That's where we're moving. We're talking about drones. We're talking about data centers.
Yes.
We're talking about ghost bats. We're talking about loyal wingmen. We're talking about data centers.
And you're talking about rocket launches on...
On Cougar Land. That's right. We're talking about people like, you know, the Kentucky Colonel, Richard Miles, walking around in oblivion. Again, we're talking about data centers. Someone sitting somewhere with a little 1980s Atari remote control, telling him where to walk and when to jump. That all goes through data centers. Just want to point out, by the way, you mentioned Chip Wars, that book. It's by Chris Miller.
Thank you.
All right.
I couldn't remember the...
So have a look for it.
Remember the author. And I was going to say another thing that I can't remember, but we mentioned last week that... 2 weeks ago now, Zero DC, I think we mentioned it.
That's right, yeah.
Did we mention even Cortisol Labs?
Probably not.
Maybe we'll talk about that next week. Cortisol Labs, anyway, are taking blood samples to build... I can't really just talk about it in 1 minute, but Cortisol Labs are a Melbourne-based startup that are now have funding by InQtel, and the Pentagon are looking at their technology as well.
Yep.
And they are using donated blood samples in order to build stem cell computers to run chips in servers in data centers.
Using basically brain cells fused onto silicon chips. Now, okay, fused might be the wrong word, or you nuts out there. I can't work out.
But no, that's a Melbourne-based company, and that technology is being developed here and has been funded to the tune of as a startup a couple of years ago. It got funded about $300,000
by the Victorian or the Australian
from the federal government.
Federal. Now, here's the thing I want to point out too: as data centres get bigger and bigger and more popular in this country, and the Australian government says we need data centres for investment. If you look at their data centre policy, that's all it says basically: money, money, money,
money, money, money. Makes the world go round.
What's happening? The same as weapon systems. We've got the states competing with each other to be the most attractive for these multinational data centre vampires to set up. You know, in Victoria, they've removed the need for public consultation. They've taken it out of the hands of the councils.
So, yes, exactly. It's gone from the hands of the councils in what's called a development facilitation program, which the planning minister is the one that signs off on it, and then it removes any of the community rights for appeal through VCAT.
Yeah.
So they still have to give a public notice period, but they're just like, oh, hey, this is happening. There's
no consultation.
Sweet, fuck all you can do about it.
That's right.
So Zera DC is the one in Campbellfield at the old Ford factory that we mentioned. We're going to talk a bit more about that. But that public notice should be coming up soon. But you can email the planning department and ask them about it because the planning department is still waiting on some information from the applicant. So I think the more people that hassle them about it, the better.
Yeah.
Now, just before we finish up, we've only got a few minutes left. But I just do want to say that next week's show, we're going to be talking. Make sure you tune in next week because we're going to have a couple of guests on the show. We're going to be talking more about data centers with Tom from Digital Rights
Watch. Tom
Solson. With Tom Solson from Digital Rights Watch. And we're also going to be having a chat with Rawan Araf from the Australian Centre for International Justice with an update on the federal court hearing for the exposure of documents related to weapons exports.
Yeah.
To Israel. Now, just before we finish up in
and
the
week
one...
after that, we'll have Abby Martin from The Empire Files.
Oh, will that
in the studio with us?
Oh, gee.
Or maybe the week after that.
Okay, but coming up.
Yep.
Now, just very quickly, before we head off and hand over to Radio MMT, a lot of our comrades have been raided by the cops in the last little while and had their tech taken. Just probably always a good time for a spring clean. But there's a few companies that they use for their digital forensics, and that's the Eskel Institute of Advanced Technologies, Microsystemation, Celebrite Australia, Mobile Content Management Solutions, trading as Datego Global, Fulcrum Management, Get Data, CBIT Digital Forensic Services, and DDLS Australia, trading as the Lumify Group. They're the ones that are contracted to do all the digital forensic with Victoria Police. So
if your laptop's gone missing or your telephone and the police raid, that's where it is, kiddies.
That's where it is. Spring clean, take care, and we'll be at you next week. And donate to Radiothon.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.